Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 339, take 2. In this episode, we talk about coastal walks, castles, and even a cog railway as we go to my next travel destination, Costa Brava, Spain. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview on Costa Brava, I do have 3 travel stories for you. In the first one, a baby was born on a plane. We've heard that story before, but the mother was so grateful for the care that she got, she named the baby after the airline. And while you might at this point hope that she was flying on Ryanair, she was in fact flying on Emirates. And then speaking of things you don't want to have happen on a plane, an Air Nippon Airways plane had a little bit of a problem. They went to press the button to let the pilot back into the cockpit, and the co-pilot accidentally pressed the wrong button, which was a command button, and didn't realize for 17 seconds the plane was turning almost upside down. But fortunately, the plane landed okay. In other stories that end well, there was a search that was taking place in Iceland for a missing tourist. Unfortunately, no one had told the tourist she was missing, so she actually participated in the search for herself. Clearly, the next advertising campaign for Iceland should be Come to Iceland and Find Yourself. For links to all 3 of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Sherry Ott, who's come to talk to us about Costa Brava in Spain. Sherry, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being back for the 3rd time, I think.
We think so. We could only come up with 2 other times that you've been on the show, and that is one was talking about solo travel as a woman a number of years ago before you were a blogger, actually. And
yes.
Then also coming back on the show to talk about your trip into Lebanon more recently. And you do blog now at oddsworld.com and also run Meet Plan Go, which we'll talk about a little later. But let's talk first about Costa Brava. Where is Costa Brava?
Oh, goodness. Well, the easy answer there is it's in Spain.
It's on the coast.
Yes. So the Costa Brava region actually kind of, it's north of Barcelona. It's really Catalonia, or it's a part of Catalonia. And it's basically north of Barcelona, and it's the northeast coast of Spain. However, it does technically extend from the shoreline inland about as far as the Pyrenees. Okay. It's not just coast, but it also covers some of this farming country and medieval towns. So it's a fairly big region.
And I will admit that I have completely selfish reasons to have you on the show, not just because you're one of my favorite bloggers, but because my next trip is Costa Brava for the TBEX, the Travel Blog Exchange Conference. I'm meeting up with a number of different travel bloggers there right after this show comes out, actually, as it turns out.
Oh, you're a lucky man. And all I can say is go hungry.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, so why should I go, or why should someone go to Costa Brava?
I'm going to say really because it has a lot of surprises. I say it's really the next Tuscany. The region itself has a variety that rivals anything that Italy has to offer, but yet it's relatively unknown to international travelers, and especially Americans. I don't think many Americans even know where Costa Brava is. So that means that you've got these beautiful landscapes, culture, food, beaches, farms, mountains, medieval towns, castles. all to yourself in a way. There's a lot of tourism there, but it's more Spanish tourism or European tourism a little bit more too. But it's just, you've got room to roam, and it's relatively still new, at least to American travelers.
And we should say that the tourism board is trying to do something about that. You were there, at least in part, on a press tour, and obviously they're sponsoring, or one of the sponsors of the conference that I'm going to. So they're trying to get a little more tourism, so that might be a good time to go now rather than later.
Yes, yes.
And what kind of itinerary would you recommend for Costa Brava?
I actually recommend that you try to see it all, honestly. So that means that you kind of plop yourself down in the middle in that farmland, in the kind of small villages. You rent yourself a villa. If you have, hopefully maybe you're traveling with a family or a number of people, villas are very economical there.
Now, you say rent a villa, and I immediately think about the way the other people live. So when you say economical, how much are we talking about? Is it more like an apartment rental? Or is it more like a mansion rental? That's really...
The villas can range from a 3-bedroom to a 10-bedroom. Some of them are quite large. Okay. They're going to range in the same price range probably as apartment rentals if you start looking at the per room cost type stuff. And then you have the big kitchen, all that kind of stuff, which also obviously helps you save money because you can do your own cooking if you'd like, at least for some of the meals. I think to really get the most out of the region, it's nice to be able to put yourself down in the middle of the region and rent a car, and then use that to explore kind of all over. So you can then go to the coast and hit some beaches for a day or whatever. And the next day you can take off and go to the Pyrenees and do hiking. And then spend a couple of days maybe in some of the villages that surround the area that might be known for wine or cava, things like that. I personally like the variety that you can get there.
Okay, now let's go back and do that in a little more detail. So we were going to the middle of the Costa Brava, which would be where? Around what town?
Around Figueres. So that's north of Girona. Girona is the biggest town, I would say, in the region.
Okay.
And so go north of Girona just a little bit and not quite to Figueres. There's all kinds of little towns around there and places where you can rent villas. Or if you want to stay maybe in an apartment in one of the villages, you could do that too. But that pretty much puts you kind of in a nice location to get to a lot of different places.
Okay. And then you took us to the beach. Did you have a favorite beach that you went to while you were there?
Yeah, I did, actually. I would say the area around La Franque was a really nice area, a beach, as well as Cayeta de Palafrugell. So I have to first off say, excuse me for any of my horrible pronunciation of Spanish, because I don't know Spanish.
Well, and is this Spanish or Catalan?
Good point. This is Catalan.
Okay. When you talk about the beaches, I will have to say that most beaches in Europe have not impressed me. Even famous beaches, like you go to the beach at Nice and it's really rocks. It's not sand at all. And the beaches on Crete have been great, but the beaches I saw in southern Spain were not impressive. So when you say a good beach by what standard? What kind of beach would I expect?
For these beaches along Costa Brava, they're very small. So these are this is not going to be like South Beach in Miami. It's not going to be long, long beaches that you can just walk across sand for miles kind of thing and see for miles. These are little private beaches that are little coves, and a lot of them you can just hike into or kayak into, and then you'll have a complete private beach. They'll be sandy, surrounded by beautiful rocks, little lagoons, turquoise waters.
That sounds lovely. Okay.
Very small and somewhat private. And even the bigger ones, like I just mentioned in La Franque, these aren't really that big. They're not big at all, actually. But there's still, it's a little bit more of a bay, and you'll have some like fishing boats and stuff moored out in the bay.
Okay. And then you mentioned kayaking into beaches. Is there a place that you would recommend renting a kayak, and would I go up or down?
Now, that is not something I did. I would have loved to. I can't say a place that I actually went. I would say, though, that another town along there, Palamos, is a nice town to kind of, I think, be able to rent those types of things. I saw some kayakers going out of there. You can also charter boats out of there, too. So that would probably be a good place to start, in Palamos. And from there, you can probably rent kayaks and then just work your way into little coves. Or the other way to get to these beaches is hiking. So there are paths that run the whole coastal region where you can hike into these coves.
And how we see the whole coastal region, roughly how many miles of coastline are we talking about?
Somewhere around 120 miles. I say that because there is a coastal trail called the Camino Ronda, and that's about 120, 130 miles that takes you the whole length of Costa Brava.
Okay, so if you're driving, probably a little shorter because you wouldn't do all the twists and turns that the hiking trail does, probably.
Yes, and there is no single like coastal road that just runs all the way up the coast or anything like that. There are some roads offset more inland, definitely, and then you just take spurs that go to these towns.
Okay, excellent. While we're at the beach and the coastline, are there other things that you want to recommend we see here?
Besides eating.
we'll get there. I'm guessing that one of the reasons you bring up eating with the coast is we're talking seafood.
Yeah, lots of great seafood. Okay. And another thing I would probably recommend doing at the beach or a nice coastal thing to do is to go check out the botanical gardens near Lloret de Mar. They're called the Santa Clotilda Botanical Garden. And once again, my pronunciation is probably quite bad. But basically, these botanical gardens are just a beautiful place to spend an afternoon, take a picnic. It's perched high above the coast, the rocky coast, that traditional setting that you see in pictures of Costa Brava. It looks like a fairy tale garden setting, quite frankly. Statues, really well kept. There are lounge chairs kind of set up all over, so you can just kind of perch yourself up there and take a picnic lunch and check out the view.
Excellent. Anything else we want to do on the coast? You mentioned eating and seafood. Let's get to that now. Is there a particular dish that Costa Brava is known for? I mean, this is not paella country.
No, it's not. Yet you can find it there, I would say, more inland. The dishes that I think of when I think of Costa Brava are kind of two staples more so than anything else that you see practically at every meal. The first one is called alioli or alioli. That basically translates into garlic and oil sauce, or you could call it mayonnaise.
Okay.
If you really want to. It's used with everything. It's served on the side all the time. So you can use it with fish, meat, vegetables. And it's a really interesting cultural kind of tradition, I would say. It's made by scratch. It's a very important part of their food culture. You start by basically crushing about 17 cloves of garlic for about an hour with a mortar and pestle. Hmm. And then after you do that for that much time, it kind of slowly becomes mush. And then you start adding the olive oil to the mixture in a very slow fashion. So it really is kind of a true art form. And what I learned is that there are typically one person in the household, which at least the ones that I met were always men, that is kind of responsible for doing the crushing. It's kind of like in America, there's always one person to carve the turkey in the household or something like that. So there's always one person that makes the aioli. So that is a very big staple in our diet. The other thing that comes to mind as far as food goes is called pa'am tomaket, which is basically bread, tomato, olive oil, and salt. So very simple. It's made on a kind of a rustic day-old bread, sliced and toasted. And then you cut these, it's a particular kind of tomato, and I can't remember the name, but it's a really hardy tomato. You cut it in half, and then you rub the pulp side on the bread, and then you drizzle olive oil, and you sprinkle the top with salt and eat it. It's eaten at any meal, even breakfast. I always saw it at breakfast, too. And it's not like pre-made. You kind of get all the ingredients. They're set out there, and it's up to you to rub the tomato and do everything to your liking. And what I learned is that the folklore was that the tomatoes were kind of used to freshen up dry old bread. And then it just became a staple in their diet. Mm-hmm. So those are the two things that I think of when I think of food in Costa Brava, I would say. Of course, the seafood is amazing when you get on the coast. I was lucky enough to go to a little fishing hut party in a way where you ended up right on the coast and we had fresh seafood and drinks, and we hung out with fishermen and sang songs and drank beer and peeled shrimp. And the shrimp, they're really large. They're called gambas. I kind of felt like I was in a Martha Stewart magazine. Everything was perfect.
Excellent. Any surprises for you on the coast?
Not as much on the coast. Another thing I guess I'll mention on the coast, it was not my favorite thing at all, but the island of Medes. The island of Medes is basically a protected area right near the town of Lestartet. So basically, you can go to Lestarte and then take a dive boat out to the island of Medes. Mm-hmm. And there you can do diving or snorkeling. Now, I happen to go snorkeling because I'm not certified to dive. And I will say, I don't know that I would recommend it for snorkeling, but I think for diving, it's supposed to be amazing. So when I went out on the boat, there were a number of other people doing the diving. I was the only one snorkeling. So I kind of just hopped in and went myself. It's quite deep and the current is pretty strong. And so you're by all these rocky islands. So I didn't feel completely comfortable. It was just hard to see things. But I think from the diver's reaction, when we got back on the boat, if you can go down deeper, I think it's pretty interesting. So that would be another thing. So for the divers out there, I would recommend that.
Excellent.
Hiking on the coast, that Camino Ronda is an amazing trail. Mm-hmm. I actually plan to go back and do that, the whole trail. So I did one little section of it just to kind of test it out and see what it was like. But I mean, it's a very well-marked trail. You can camp, you can stay at hotels along the way. You can swim in these little coves. It would probably take a couple weeks or so to do the whole trail, but you can also just do day trips or maybe a week of it or whatever you'd like. So
let's say that it's fair to say that you're in better shape than I am. You hiked the Camino Santiago this year.
Yes.
Although had moments, as I recall, that you hated it, but... So how does this compare? Is this an easy, simple family 1-mile hike sort of thing, or is it more rugged in places?
Well, I can say it's definitely more rugged and up and down than the Camino de Santiago that I did.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I mean, the Camino de Santiago is about long distance hiking, if you ask me. This, since it's coastal and you're going up and down a lot, I think it's much more technical. But the nice thing is, you can choose any section of it that you want to do.
Sure.
And there are easier sections. So if you and your family want to go out and do just a day hike, I did the day hike from Calle de Palafrugal to Lefranc Lighthouse. It took a couple of hours. It was good. It was uphill, but it wasn't impossible at all. Okay. So I think you can find pieces of it that will fit lots of different fitness levels.
Excellent. And then I said hiking in the Pyrenees and you gushed before we even got into what you were talking about.
Well, I love mountains. I'm a mountain person. Yeah. So the Pyrenees, and I was only able to spend one day there, but it was certainly one of my highlights as far as getting to see them finally. But I will say half of the fun was the drive there.
And I would guess you don't tend towards car sickness.
No. And I was the only one in the car, which helps. Okay. But yeah, the drive there from where I was staying near Figueres was just kind of a twisty corkscrew, 2-lane road, beautiful views. And the whole time I kind of thought I was going in the wrong direction because I thought there must be a bigger highway that runs to this. Because where I was going, which is called Val de Nuria, is quite a popular tourist spot. But no, I was on the right road. It was just a 2-lane road. It was a fun ride. Now, the interesting thing about Val de Nuria is... you can't actually drive there. You can only drive so close. Val de Nuria means hidden valley. And basically, you drive to where this old rack railway begins. The rack railway has been refurbished, but basically, you drive, you park there, there's a nice parking lot, and you get on the rack railway, and then that will take you, that's probably another... 20 minutes, will take you through the mountains and deposit you at the valley, basically.
And you're using a term I do not know, which is rack railway. I know both of those terms, but not the combination.
Well, I'm assuming it's a certain type of rail or car. I don't even know if I know that myself. I just know that's how they refer to it.
Okay.
It's kind of a one-way track, so you can't be passing trains to each other kind of thing. So, okay. And it goes through some very narrow sections. It's actually, the ride up there is really fun. Beautiful views and pretty amazing to think that I think that railway has been in operation for a long time. So
and you see the ride up there. So you're driving up the mountain and then you're taking the railway further up to a hanging valley sort of thing.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Exactly. The other thing I would say is that the rack railway, that ticket, the round trip ticket does cost around 20 euro for round trip. So I think it's kind of expensive, but you do have another option. And that is if you have the time and the desire, you can hike in and out. However, that'll take about 3 to 4 hours each way. So some people go and hike in and take the rack railway down or the opposite, which would probably seem to make more sense, take the railway up, hike down, and it's supposed to be spectacular. And unfortunately, I did not have time to do that the day I was there, but I would have loved to. So it seemed well marked. I saw where the trail started.
The answer to my question is rack as in rack and pinion, or also known here as a cog railway. So a steep enough railway that they need to have a cog system of gears to keep the train from slipping backwards. Okay, now I've got you.
Perfect. Once you get to the valley, you get off the railway and there's just so many options of what you can do there. In the winter, it is a ski resort. So there is a big lodge there. In the summer, at that point, once you get off, you've got hiking. There's boats in the lake. There's horseback riding. It's just a nature wonderland, basically. There's also, in addition to the lodge that's there, you can also go up a little bit further on another chairlift kind of thing.
Okay.
And that will take you up to, there's also a hostel up there. Hosteling International has a nice little hostel up there. So there's a couple of different options for lodging. So you could go up there, stay there for a day and hike around the area, or you could do some quick hikes around and then take the railway back down and do everything in a day if you want to.
And then the third thing you mentioned in your whirlwind introduction there at the beginning was beautiful villages.
Oh, so that was really probably one of my favorite things that I did too, is just I had the car, I was in a pretty central location, and just getting around to the villages, small little villages, some medieval ones that still had old bridges and moats and stuff like that. That was the town of Bezalou. Very cute little town, great for kids if you ask me, because just the bridges and the moats were kind of fun. I actually spent a lot of time exploring these smaller villages and eating there. I found some of the best little restaurants in some of the smallest villages, actually.
Okay.
That ranged from really high end to just comfort food, rustic cooking.
Any particular restaurants stand out for you?
Yes, there are probably two, and they're on two different scales. Probably my biggest surprise in the whole area. It was called La Rectoria, and it had extremely high-end quality food, I would say. It's a must-stop in the area if you're a foodie, definitely. But I would say good luck finding it, because it's tucked away in this tiny, tiny village, Espinavesa. It's off the main roads. There are no signs. There's no fanfare. And you'll know it when you found it, because you'll be able to find the village. But then you just kind of drive through the village and you can't miss it for the most part, because it's really the only thing there. They have a tasting menu. It included an aperitif, six starters, two seconds, two desserts, petit fours. It was really a memorable experience. And it was the quality of experience that I would have had at like a New York City restaurant, a top restaurant kind of thing. But it was in this just unassuming little village. There was really not many other people there when I was there. And I was even able to go back in the kitchen and meet the chef, Jordy, and his team. So it seemed completely out of place to me. But I also kind of felt like it was my secret little find.
Excellent. Now, one thing I'm curious about when you're talking about dinner, we just did a show recently on Toledo and Segovia in Spain, and we talked about the shifted schedule in that part of Spain, at least. Is that still true way up here in Costa Brava?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'm laughing because there was one restaurant I went to in also a very small village, probably 100 people that live in the village, and I showed up at 9 o'clock, and I went to go in. And they came back and the door wasn't open, of course. And they said, no, we open at 9:30. And I thought, great. Okay. So I had to go do something for 30 minutes and then I could finally get in and begin to have dinner at 9:30.
Okay.
The other thing I was going to mention is the other restaurant that I just had a really lovely experience in, also in a small town. The town was called Orfez. This was really kind of halfway between the coast and the mountains and the Pyrenees. It was somewhat of a surprise, but this chef actually did more what I would call comfort food.
Okay.
But probably just traditional food of the area. It was very hearty. And basically I had this onion, he called it an onion cake. I would call it an onion tart or something like that. That was just out of this world. A number of different types of caramelized onions.
Is it similar to a Spanish tortilla?
I would say it's a little bit creamier.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's not quite as solid as
and
a Spanish tortilla.
My apologies for anybody who knows a Mexican tortilla, but not a Spanish tortilla. Spanish tortilla, think more omelet than
flatbread.
Yeah. No, this was definitely more of like a little tart or a quiche, but a definitely like softer. But the onion cake was wonderful. I also had a duck with orange sauce and then an apple cake also that was like just swimming in cream. It was lovely. But what made it even more special, and this is what I love about travel, is I ended up strangely getting to know the chef. I mean, because we were talking, I was the only one there. I went for lunch. It was very, like I said, very small town. And we ended up becoming friends, and he ended up taking me around the region later that evening to a tapas tasting event in Banyoles. And he not only took me to Banyoles for the event, but then he ended up like showing me all around. I met all these other people. I mean, it was a very kind of local experience that was probably one of my most memorable experiences and special to me because it wasn't planned. And it was just really nice of him to kind of take me under his wing and show me around. And I think he was just really happy to be able to kind of show off the cuisine as well as the area to me.
Excellent. Now, you were there in June?
Yes, it was June.
And was that a good time to visit?
I thought so. I mean, it wasn't so hot. It was definitely nice enough to be on the beach during the day, mm-hmm. without a doubt. But it would cool down in the evenings. We had practically no rain that I remember. I don't know if we were just lucky or if that's normal in June, but it was really quite nice.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned the snorkeling in the one spot being a little disappointing. Are there other things that we know you love the region? So getting that aside, we don't want to get in trouble with the tourism board, but were there other things that you would recommend probably not worth your time? Instead, do one of the other things you've talked about?
No, I really enjoyed everything I did. That snorkeling just wasn't my thing, I would say, in that particular spot. But I don't know. I don't really have any other things where I would say were big misses. I had a lot of surprises.
And you've said that a couple times now. What sort of surprises that you haven't mentioned already?
I would say one of the surprises that I wasn't ready for was Girona. Girona is a lovely city that I really wasn't prepared for. The cathedral, the river, the restaurants, the whole vibe of the place I thought was great. I felt like as I was walking around it, I just felt really comfortable there. I felt like it was much more manageable and laid back than Barcelona, which of course it is a smaller town. Lots of families and at the same time, very artistic. They have a flower festival there in May. If people can go, I think it's worth it. The whole city is decorated with floral designs from the different stores, restaurants, etc. But it basically is a very creative type event. But I love Girona, and I was able to really explore the cathedral. They've got some amazing art there. So that was a surprise. I would say we talked a little bit about the Camino Ronda because I had no idea that existed at the time. And then really just, some of this stuff with the quality of the food in the smaller towns were probably my three big surprises.
Okay. Now, I'm assuming you speak Spanish, but not Catalan.
I don't speak any other language.
I don't speak any other language. Okay. You were able to get around fine as a monolinguist.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, I was able to get everywhere I needed to. I would say that I definitely used my Google Translate application on my phone. You can translate directly into Catalan, thank goodness. So that's one thing to have handy, or do know a few words of Catalan before you go might be nice. I knew some Spanish just from spending a lot of time in Spain, but just I know like menu Spanish, which doesn't get you that far.
It helps in the restaurant, though.
The one thing I noticed, and especially as I got into more of these small villages and started meeting locals, it was a little bit harder to communicate, but not impossible. It was funny because what they would normally go through first is they would ask if you knew Catalan, and then they would immediately go to French because close to the border of France.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them speak French. And of course, I didn't speak French either, no Spanish. So we would get by. Even the story I told you about La Barentina, which was the little restaurant in Orfez, the chef, Albert, he was really cute. When he came out, he asked me if I spoke Spanish or Catalan or French. And of course, I didn't. And so we tried to kind of get through the conversation a little bit. And then all of a sudden, this other woman comes out. And this other woman starts speaking English to me, and she basically explains that she's the neighbor and that he just called her to help come and translate, which I thought was really cute.
So one of the things I enjoy about your site, about otsworld.com, I'll give you an extra plug there, is the photography. So picture this for me. You're standing at the most beautiful spot on the Costa Brava. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I'm standing on the coast, actually.
Okay.
And I'm looking at a fresh plate of gambas, shrimp.
Okay.
And my cold beer, my cold cerveza. And the rocky coast behind me, that's what I really think of when I think of Costa Brava, I would say. That puts me in my happy place. Peel and eat shrimp.
I think you just talked a few people to going, so that's all right. What do you wish you had known before you went?
You know what? I wish I had known just how spectacular some of the food was there and how famous it was. And because I really didn't know. One of the things I didn't mention is that as part of the gastronomy trip that I took, which was kind of the first half of my travels there, we went to a restaurant called Cellar de Can Roca, which is supposedly the second best restaurant in the world as rated by Restaurant Magazine.
Oh, okay.
For foodies, they'll recognize it. I wasn't a foodie, but I guess I'm turning into one. So that was one thing I wish I would have known. I had no idea that these restaurants were so good and that this region was so well known for their chefs and their food. The other thing I guess I wish I would have known is, of course, I wish I would have known more Catalan.
I don't imagine they expect people to know Catalan, though.
No, but when you can pick up a few words and start to use them, it's always appreciated.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Always helps. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Costa Brava.
The fact that you go to a restaurant in a small village at 9 o'clock and it's not open.
That might be only in Spain, but okay.
Yeah. I still am amazed by that, though. It's just such a different culture. And kids running around at the restaurants until 11:30, 12 o'clock at night.
No, I remember still sitting at dinner at midnight with my son passed out on the table, but other little kids running around who clearly had a siesta. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Your best money-saving tip for the region?
I'm going to probably go back to the villas or an apartment rental. Like when you can get, when you go to a region like that and you stay for a week or whatever, I think any time that you can have access to a kitchen, big or small, you can always save money. And I think there are a lot of options to do that in Costa Brava. I mean, even in Girona, you can rent apartments. In Besalú, in that small little village town that I talked about with the moat and the bridge, you can rent apartments or villas or homes. So there's a lot of those options. And I think in the end, that does help you save money, certainly.
Excellent. Well, the last two questions. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Costa Brava when what?
I'm going to say when I'm eating pa'am tomaquette for breakfast.
Okay.
Yeah.
That did sound unusual. Okay. So if I'm in Madrid, I've got my churro and my hot chocolate. And if I'm up here in Costa Brava, I've got my tomaquette.
Yes.
Okay. And then if you had to summarize Costa Brava in just three words, what three words would you choose?
Delicious.
That came through. Okay.
Yes. Rugged, both for the Pyrenees as well as the coastline.
Okay.
And secret, probably for the coves, the restaurants, undiscovered by international tourism, really, at this point. So, yeah.
Excellent. Now, Sherry, to read more about your travel writing, we can go to otsworld.com, but you also have another project. Would you like to tell people about Meet Plan Go?
I would love to. Thanks. Meet Plan Go is a website, but it's also, we hold an annual event and it's all about travel. The event is coming up on October 16th in 10 cities. You can get a list of that and more information at meetplango.com. When I say it's all about travel, it's all about teaching people how to do longer term travel or career breaks and sabbaticals. So taking a break from your job, stepping away, and furthering your skills through travel and seeing the world. So it might be anywhere from a 3-month to a 12-month trip. And we teach people and give people resources on how they can plan that and actually achieve it.
Excellent. And I'll be at the San Francisco event again this year, and I believe you'll be in New York City.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, Sherry, thanks so much for coming back on The Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your newfound love for Costa Brava, Spain.
Thanks for having me.
In news of the community, you may have noticed that I introduced this as the second try at episode 339. And those of you who are on the newsletter or who read the blog this week or who follow me on Twitter or join the Facebook group have already heard the story, so you can skip ahead. But there actually was another episode 339 that will never be released. Basically, what happened is we recorded an episode. I knew the sound quality wasn't great in the episode, but I didn't realize how bad it was. Sent it off to the editor, who edited up the audio, put in the pictures. I got it back. I put in three news stories. I did a community section, and then I just got to the last thing that I do, which is listening to enough of the story to write a paragraph to describe it. And the audio was so bad, I couldn't bear to listen to it, and I did not want to inflict it on you. And unfortunately, I had another episode. If I had realized earlier that the audio was so bad, we could have skipped ahead to this episode and done it last week. It's my fault, and I apologize for missing a week, but I hope you understand. And we will re-record that episode. It was an episode with Michael Sonchino, who's been on the show, I believe, three times before, and now four. We'll have him come back on and talk about Tajikistan, which you may never go to, but it was a fascinating interview, and I'm sorry that you missed it. I heard from Daryl this week. We've been using some of Daryl's photos for the photo of the day on Amateur Traveler recently. You can check those out. And Daryl said, I was looking at the podcast of Istanbul because we were hoping to go there and Morocco in 2014. Daryl clearly plans further ahead than I do because I'm not sure where I'm going in October yet. And I downloaded a Travel in 10 thing. I heard you on an interview there. You were all over the place. Everything I do to research, I come across you. Your Banff podcast is how I came to your podcast in the first place when we were planning our two-month U.S.-Canada trip in 2007. And it was when I first got my iPod. And yeah, for those of you who haven't heard, David Brody does another podcast or has done another podcast. He hasn't put out an episode recently called Travel in 10. The idea that it was travel information about a destination in 10 minutes or less. So David's obviously not as long-winded as I am, but I did do an interview with him on Istanbul a number of years ago by this point. I also got a nice note from David on the Amateur Traveler podcast Facebook group, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. Every podcast increases my knowledge and encourages me to explore more of the world. Thank you for the wonderful work you do. And David, thanks so much. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com or send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also join the Facebook group as David did or follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cave.